This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports that one expert is calling the CDC guidance on vaccination far too cautious.
Former Baltimore Health Commissioner Leanna Wen says the guidance is silent on going to restaurants or other places, even as business restrictions are lifted across the country. The guidance also discourages unnecessary travel, which may be confusing for vaccinated Americans who are hoping to visit family across the country or abroad.
That is AP correspondent Sagar Magani reporting. Mike Ryan, the WHO's top emergency expert, now says some countries should have listened more carefully when the World Health Organization declared a global health emergency in January of 2020 regarding COVID-19. Asked if the organization should have used the term pandemic sooner, Ryan said maybe we needed to shout louder, but maybe some people need hearing aids. Ryan also said that the body would not recommend the use of vaccine certificates as a requirement for travel, as access to vaccines was still limited and not equitable worldwide. Commenting on the use of so-called vaccine passports, he said they could cause unfairness to be further branded into the system. Protesters persisted in southern Myanmar Tuesday, more than a month after the nation's elected government was ousted in a military coup. Demonstrators marched through the small city of Dawei carrying the flag for detained leader Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy. To date, the junta, a violent crackdown against the movement, has left more than 50 protesters dead. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. Hundreds of people gathered outside a fortified courthouse in Minneapolis for the first day of the trial of a former police officer charged in George Floyd's death. They chanted "No justice, no peace" during the rally Monday, and one speaker implored the jury to do the right thing and convict Derek Chauvin in Floyd's May 25th death. As the judge and attorneys convened high above street level, one organizer lamented the barricades, fencing, and barbed wire shrouding the courthouse as a cage for protesters. Organizers have pledged to turn out in numbers at key points in the trial. The FBI has tracked down more than two suspects in the Capitol riot that occurred in January, AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
Two men arrested over the weekend in connection with the Capitol riot appear to have taken measures to avoid apprehension. Assistant U.S. Attorney Benjamin Gianforte told a magistrate judge in federal court Monday 36-year-old Roberto Minuta had canceled his phone account on March 1st and got rid of his iPhone. The New York Times reports Minuta was one of six bodyguards for longtime Trump confidant Roger Stone in the hours before the January 6th insurrection. 32-year-old Isaac Steve Sturgeon of Dillon, Montana, who was arrested at John F. Kennedy International Airport Saturday, had left the country. The FBI says Sturgeon traveled to Kenya on January 24th, but he was deported back to New York. Mike Gracia, Washington.
10 years after Japan's earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster, the lives of many who survived are still on hold. One man learned to dive in order to look for his wife's remains. A soy sauce maker rebuilt his family business but lost his customer base. A rice farmer refused to leave even as dozens of neighboring homes remain empty. On March 11th of 2011, one of the biggest tremors on record touched off a massive tsunami, killing more than 18,000 people and set off catastrophic meltdowns at the Fukushima nuclear plant. Nearly 500,000 people were displaced. Tens of thousands still have not returned home, and many are continue to struggle to rebuild. Recapping one of our top stories, Mike Ryan, the WHO's top emergency expert, is now saying that some countries should have listened more carefully when the World Health Organization declared a global health emergency in January of 2020 regarding COVID-19. Now, commenting on the use of so-called vaccine passports, and eventually, he said they could cause unfairness to the further branded into the system. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Senegal's opposition leader is released, but supporters say they will continue to protest.
We are saying that justice should play its role, but at the same time, we are saying that we don't believe that there is a fair justice in Senegal, because there is an instrumentalization of the justice system.
Benin authorities have arrested the country's female opposition leader. We'll speak with Ivory Coast opposition about that country's legislative election results. Liberia hosts a war crimes trial for the first time, and Burundi releases a large number of prisoners.
Basically, people who are convicted to 5 years or less are set free. But those sentenced for genocide, crimes against humanity, crimes of war, armed robbery, etc., are excluded.
An ill-gotten gains legislation in France is a warning shot to corrupt leaders. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Senegalese authorities on Monday released on bail opposition leader Ousmane Sonko after charging him with rape. His arrest and detention have sparked widespread protest. Yassine Fall is the former director for economic empowerment at UN Women in New York and a political ally of Ousmane Sonko. She says the protest will continue because the people do not trust the justice system.
We are saying that justice should play its role. But at the same time, we are saying that we don't believe that there is a fair justice in Senegal, because there is an instrumentalization of the justice system. We know that there is a coincidence and a precedent that the government, and particularly the president of Senegal, has repeatedly tried to undermine its main opponents. Every time there is a rising opponent that really is recognized by all political observers and the Senegalese people as someone who can beat the president, the president has found a political ways, smear campaign, to use the legal system to undermine them.
As you know, Mr. Sonko is facing rape charges. Are you suggesting that he should not face trial to vindicate himself?
In this case of accusation of rape, we would wish to have a fair election, because I'm a feminist. And to me, any woman that accused someone of rape should have justice applied. But as soon as you accuse also someone of rape, there should be an investigation. The investigation that has been put in place to us has not really been transparent. The captain of the gendarmerie that has undertaken all of the investigation has resigned because of fear of political pressure, and because of the facts that he is fearing for his life. The judge that was given to judge this case, who has been instrumentalized many times by the president, has resigned because he felt that there is no enough evidence in this case. So I would really wish that we have a justice system that allows us to have a day in court where justice is done in a transparent manner. But what we see here is an instrumentalization of this case, politicization of this case.
What do you say, Yassim, to those who may argue that the opposition is continuing to protest because you have exterior motives, which is to say you don't want President Macky Sall to run again in 2024?
Mr. Macky Sall has repeatedly said, inside the country and overseas, that he will not run for a third term. He has said that several times on TV, on radio, in front of, you know, in France, in other countries. And today, he refuses, he says yes or no. And we know that his plan is to run for a third term. And this is illegal, this is against the constitution. This is against his words that he has given to the Senegalese people. So we are saying that we don't want him to run for the president. We will not allow him to run because he's not able to run. And his plan now is to eliminate his opponent so he can give him a boulevard for a third term and maybe a lifetime presidency. So this is why we are resisting. This is why we are standing for justice. This is why we are standing to defend our democracy.
Yassine Fall is a political ally of Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko. She was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. Benin authorities on Monday arrested the leader of the country's largest opposition party and the country's first female presidential candidate. Rekia Mandugu was charged with planning to assassinate several political figures and also financing terrorists. Sadiku Alao is president of Gardez Africa, a research group on democracy and economic and social development in Africa. He says President Patrice Talon is basically trying to get rid of his strongest opponent ahead of the April 11 presidential election.
I think you have to know the climate in which electoral process is going on in Benin. You know, a lot of people have been arrested. Some are forced to exile only because they are opponent to the government of Mr. Talon. And the lady Rekiatu was not living in the country for a while. She was advisor to the Togolese president. And she's seen to have come back with a lot of money and very strong relation abroad. And that is enough to become an enemy to be destroyed by the regime of Talon. Because, you know, during his 5 years in power, he made sure that people on the opponent, they don't have financial resources to be able to contest the election. So he is the one designating who will contest the election against him, because he's the one nominating them and providing them with resources, electoral resources, I mean. But this lady happened not to be someone who needs his money. She has her own resources because of her previous relation with Togo Republic. That's the main reason why the government thinks she needs to be put in jail so that she cannot be active in this electoral process.
The government said that she was planning to assassinate political figures. What political figures are the government talking about?
I think they are second zone people. One of them is called Badamasi, who is a member of the nominated parliamentarian, and another one was a former mayor. But in the north of the country, they are not very important people. And not, anything happening to them cannot disturb the electoral process. That was just an argument to put the lady Rekia in jail. Very simple. They are not important people.
Do you think the arrest of Mandugu has something to do with the election that is scheduled for next month, April, where President Pierre Talon is running for re-election?
Rekia Mandugu has been disqualified for the next election. But the main issue is what will happen in April 5th, because the official power of President Talon is ending at that day. Regardless of the fact that he offered himself more than 40 days in addition, which nobody is ready to accept. So what he's doing now is to jail a lot of people to weaken the opposition and those who will be ready to fight him during this crucial period. When people are thinking that they will not accept any order from him, since for majority of the people is no more the president of the country. Of course, he wants to be reelected. But during these 40 days, that will be the very dangerous period where everybody may disobey him, including the army people.
Sadiku Alao is president of Gardez Africa, a research group on development and economic and social development in Africa. He was speaking with us from the Benin capital, Cotonou. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara on Monday named Patrick Aki as interim prime minister to replace Ahmed Bakayoko, who is in poor health. In another development, President Ouattara's ruling RHDP party has won 147 of the country's 255 legislative seats. Jean-Gervais Tchéide is the vice president for finance of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's party. He says the opposition also did very well and would have done even better if all the necessary measures had been put in place.
I am so happy. It was my first time to run for any elections at this level, so I'm very happy.
So how do you think overall the opposition did in the election?
Well, I think that the opposition did their best to win all the seats where they were running. But the problem is that the opposition had very little time to prepare, whereby on the other side, the ruling party had prepared everything already. So the situation was very difficult for the opposition parties, but they didn't want to boycott. We wanted to participate because we knew that it was the trap that the ruling party had held for us, hoping that we would say that we were the rules of the electoral commission and all those problems, the electoral list, all those problems. But we decided nevertheless to go to those elections. So for the time being, I'm waiting for more information, more results to see whether we have done well or not.
Former President Laurent Gbagbo, the leader of your party, has congratulated you and the other opposition candidates. What do you think about that?
As I said before, we're not prepared, and the president knew that it was very difficult for us to win the maximum of seats in the parliament, but we are doing well, as I know. Now, we are hoping that the other places where there are still some problems, the electoral commission will be able to tackle the problem with equality, with justice, and according to the rules that we know. So the president has congratulated us, which is a good thing. I'm waiting for the whole results to know whether we have done well or not. I'm feeling my village internet here, it is very difficult.
Now, you mentioned that the electoral commission or the government was hoping that you would not take part.
Yes.
The information I have is that the ruling party won 147 of the 255 seats. Do you think the opposition would have done better if coming into the election, these problems you talk about, and also the confusion within the opposition itself, if those things were not there, do you think you would have done better?
Oh, for sure, yes. I think that if we had have enough time to prepare, number one, and number two, if the rules had been followed by the electoral commissions and especially by the government concerning the list, electoral list, and concerning also the financial aspect of the candidacy, because we know in Cote d'Ivoire that there is a law according to which the government must give some financial help to the candidate for all political elections, which is very, very good for democracy. Unfortunately, we didn't have these funds, and we tried our best with our means, which is a problem.
Jean-Gervais Tchéide is the vice president for finance of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's political party. He was speaking with us from the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 9th. Jibril Masekwa, a former top commander of the Sierra Leone ex-rebel group Revolutionary United from the RUF, is on trial in Tampere, Finland. He is being tried for war crimes and crimes against humanity that he allegedly committed in Liberia while fighting alongside Charles Taylor's rebels from 1999 to 2003. The presiding judge decided that the court of 12 people should travel to Liberia and Sierra Leone to hear from more than 80 witnesses, rather than making the witnesses travel to Finland. This week marks the third week since the Finnish court moved to Liberia to hear the testimonies of eyewitnesses and victims of Masekwai's alleged war crimes. Rita Jlobwe is following the trial in Liberia and has this report.
The court has ruled that all witnesses' identities be protected because of credible fear of intimidation or retaliation. The location of the trial has been kept secret for the same reason. None of the witnesses who testified has been able to establish the exact year the events they described took place. The inconsistencies in testimonies are a challenge for the prosecution team because no evidence or witness testimony has formed a key part of the case. But State Prosecutor Tom Latini says he is confident the consistency of the stories will overwhelm any inconsistencies about dates and which fashion Masekwai was representing.
There's no question in my mind that the witness statements wouldn't be genuine and that the witnesses wouldn't tell us what they know. And the witnesses are telling us their best knowledge, the truth according to their best knowledge.
But in an interview, defense lawyer Kali Gomoros says the inconsistencies undermine the case against his client. He also says witnesses' repeated references to Masekwai as injured Gabriel could be interpreted to mean that his client is not the person who committed the alleged crimes.
First they said that everything happens 2003. And when we start, then everybody said that it was the wrong year. The right year is 2000. So I don't understand how it's possible that everybody said first wrong year. And when they came to court, everybody fixed it.
It is alleged that Masekwai committed most of his atrocious crimes in Lofa, one of Liberia's largest counties, and in Monrovia, the capital of the country. Nathan Kwey, a citizen of Lofa, says he sees the trial of Masekwai as a gateway to justice for victims of the Liberian Civil War. He says the trial should also affect Liberians who played key roles in the civil crisis.
It should not only be limited to foreign nationals who committed crimes during the Civil War. We should start with our own people that committed mayhem in this country.
Hawana Tukanti, another resident of Lofa County and a direct victim of the alleged war crimes, says the ongoing trial is good news for Liberians. She says living in the same community with perpetrators and seeing them go unpunished is provoking.
If we just set these people free, not for us now, not for our own generation, but who knows, tomorrow similar thing will happen and they will say let them go free. So we really love this kind of thing to happen, to discipline, because in any country if there is discipline, then people will be afraid to commit a crime.
A district commissioner in Lofa County, Abbott Selif, says he wants the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia to bring to justice those who committed havoc in the country.
I will support the war crime court because I'm a victim, because my former president was indicted and is being incarcerated. So those who have committed mayhem should be brought to book.
Why others are calling for the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia? John Jada, a resident of Monrovia, says the court will be a setback for the gains the country has made so far in reconciliation.
The war crime will come, but it will affect us in the country because you and myself will fall into it. Because your brother is part of it, myself, my brother is part of it. Then when I hold you, I say you got to face the court, and my brother too will face the same court.
The testimonies over the last 2 weeks have focused on alleged crimes that took place in 2001, when then-President Charles Taylor's forces were fighting the Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy Lord rebels in the Monrovia area. Masekwai's forces were allegedly supporting Taylor, but Masekwai denies all the charges, claiming he was not in Liberia. Rita Jobwe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Burundian President Evariste Ndayishimiye on Monday freed 5,255 prisoners as part of a presidential pardon. Willie Nyamitwe is the Chief of Information and Communication Division at the Burundian State House.
I confirm that President Ndayishimiye has pardoned more than 40% of prisoners in Burundi. who is pardoned. Basically, people who are convicted to 5 years or less are set free. But those sentenced for genocide, crimes against humanity, crimes of war, armed robbery, etc., are excluded. They are not pardoned. He also pardoned pregnant women convicted and breastfeeding women who are convicted. He pardoned juveniles convicted but who are less than 18 years old, and convicted people suffering from incurable diseases. And he also pardoned prisoners over 70 years old.
Do those being released include political prisoners?
Mr. James, we have no political prisoners in Burundi. All the prisoners, they are sentenced, convicted because of crimes committed. So I can confirm that in Burundi, we have no political prisoners.
The president said that the release is needed to reduce prison congestion. Were they released for this purpose or because the number of people in Burundian jails, particularly during the rule of former President Pierre Nkurunziza, brought some disrepute to Burundi's image?
They were released because President Evariste Ndayishimiye believes that there is a need to harness their energies productively to contribute to the development of the country. Therefore, if more than 40% of prisoners are set free, the remaining 60% will live in better conditions.
Of course, your critics say that there are many human rights activists and opposition politicians who are still in jail. Should we expect more?
Thank you, Mr. James. But as I said before, we have no political prisoners in Burundi. Are we going to get other prisoners who are going to be set free, pardoned? I don't know. This question is left up to the discretion of the president himself.
Wele Nyamitwe is the Chief of Information and Communications Division at the Burundian State House. He was speaking with us from the capital, Bujumbura. France may soon join just a handful of countries, including the United States and Switzerland, with far-reaching legislation aimed to repatriate confiscated stolen assets to their countries of origin. But anti-corruption watchdogs say the draft legislation now in French Parliament needs improvement. France's highest court will soon rule on a so-called ill-gotten gains case involving Equatorial Guinea. Lisa Bryan reports from Paris.
A luxury townhouse on Avenue Foch, one of Paris's chicest addresses, is caught up in a years-long legal battle between France and Equatorial Guinea. The African nation argues the mansion is part of its diplomatic mission. French prosecutors claim it's owned by Théodorine Obiang, the wealthy son of Equatorial Guinea's longtime leader. So far, France is winning. A Paris court fined the younger Obiang millions of dollars and handed him a suspended prison sentence. The reason? The court said he plundered his nation to finance his luxury lifestyle, a sentence upheld last November by the International Court of Justice in The Hague. French authorities have also seized the 100-room Paris mansion, along with other property, including a fleet of luxury cars. Equatorial Guinea is appealing the case, and France's highest court is expected to examine it shortly. If France wins again, the millions of dollars in assets would normally end up in its public coffers. But a new measure making its way through French Parliament may change that trajectory. If it becomes law, the millions would instead head back to Equatorial Guinea, targeting its majority poor population.
This is the money that was stolen from people that work hard in their country, people that really need this money, and then we need to make sure that it will go back in those countries and use it properly.
Deputy Hervé Berville of the ruling La République En Marche, or LREM party, is helping to sponsor the measure, which was passed last week in France's National Assembly, but still faces a Senate vote.
It's really important to really tell our citizens and the citizens of the world in those countries, in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, that France and other countries will not allow like dictators or son of dictator to take money that is not their money.
Anti-corruption groups praise the legislation, but they argue some of the language needs strengthening. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And that's it for this Tuesday, March 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.